Dr. William Luther Pierce. The year 2000. Conditioning for death.
Hello. Are people, let's be more specific, are white Americans less intelligent today than they were a century ago? An impartial observer, someone from Mars, say, might sample the sort of television entertainment that keeps most white Americans occupied in their leisure time these days, and then compare that with the penny romances the masses read in 1900 for relaxation, and conclude that the IQ level has indeed gone down a bit. He might take a look at the non-stop circus of the current presidential election, and he would be even more inclined to think that we aren't quite as smart as we used to be. The real clincher for the Martian observer, however, would be an examination of the way American public policy, as manifested in our laws and our public behavior, has changed. I mean, we did some stupid things and had some really dumb habits in the latter half of the 19th century, but they were nothing compared to the inexcusable foolishness which characterizes our behavior today. In the 19th century, we decided that slavery wasn't a good policy, and so we put an end to it. And that was a smart thing to do, because we never should let ourselves become dependent on another race. But then we just turned 4 million former black slaves loose in our society. We didn't send them back to Africa or otherwise get rid of them. We didn't even sterilize them. We just turned them loose. That was a really stupid and irresponsible thing to do. But at least we didn't let them vote. There were a few criminally insane people in Washington who thought they should be permitted to vote, and even managed to change our Constitution to that effect. But as a practical matter, we didn't let our former slaves meddle in the business of choosing our legislators and judges and other public officials to any substantial degree. And of course, we didn't let blacks get near our women. We had laws against miscegenation nearly everywhere, and the laws were enforced either by the authorities or by the people. Today, we have more than 30 million blacks running loose in our society. And we not only let them vote and copulate with our women, but we encourage them in this behavior. We have welfare programs which allow them to breed faster than we do. We give them food stamps and free medical care. We give those of them who are willing to work preferential treatment in hiring and promotion. We bus their children to the schools attended by our children. Our colleges and universities have special recruitment programs to entice more blacks into becoming students. And we bend our admissions requirements to get them into college and lower our academic standards to keep them in. In magazine advertisements, on television news programs, in professional sports, and in half the movies coming out of Hollywood, blacks are held up as role models for our children and as objects of romantic fantasy for our women. And we don't even speak out against it. Black faces on our television screens advise us about our health, analyze the news of the day for us, and tell us how we should invest our money. And we act as if everything is as it should be. All of that is not only more stupid than anything we did in the 19th century, it's insane. So, are we dumber than we used to be? The Martian probably would think so. But I'm inclined to believe that it's not just a lower average intelligence which causes us to behave so stupidly today. What has happened is that the way white Americans are conditioned to think and behave has changed. Let us remember that most people don't think and behave the way they do, don't have the opinions and attitudes they do as the result of any rational process. They don't examine the world around them, independently analyze the data, and then decide what attitude to have about what they have observed. Instead, in nearly every case, they let themselves be told what to think. They let themselves be told what their attitudes and opinions should be. That's nothing new, of course. That's the way the bulk of the population always has been, in good times and in bad times. The really important thing in determining what most people think and how they behave is the sort of conditioning they receive. Children are conditioned in the home by their parents when they are small. Later, they are conditioned by their playmates and then by their schools. As adults, they are conditioned by the marketplace, the public square, the church, the village store. They absorb the attitudes and opinions of their peers and of their betters. At least, that's the way it used to be in past centuries. The new element in this lifelong conditioning process is the influence of the mass media. First and foremost of television, but also the cinema, radio, magazines and newspapers and comic books and popular music. Well, I've talked before, more than once, about the role of the mass media in conditioning the public, in shaping their attitudes and opinions. I've talked about how the Jews infiltrated and then dominated and controlled the mass media of news and entertainment during the past century, and how they used their control of the media and of public opinion to transform our whole society in order to suit their own interests and schemes. Today I want to talk with you about another element in the conditioning of our people, which makes them behave in the self-destructive manner we see all around us. I want to talk with you about the role of the schools. It's not an independent role, of course. The way in which our schools, from kindergarten all the way up through the universities, condition our children and young people is determined by the way in which the teachers and professors themselves have been conditioned. And in a centralized, bureaucratic society, such as we have in the United States today, there is a high degree of centralized control over the way in which schools condition students. It's not just the conditioning of the teachers and professors. It's also the program that they are required to follow, regardless of their own beliefs and attitudes. Now, I'll jump ahead a bit and tell you what the purpose of that program is. Then I'll back up and fill in some of the details. To the extent that there is a single program governing public education in America today, a single purpose behind education in America, it is to condition white children and young people to accept without resistance a multicultural society, a multiracial society in which they have no more important or dominant role than the descendants of their black slaves, or mestizos who have recently come across the border from Mexico, or Hmong tribesmen fresh off the boat from Southeast Asia. And it also is to condition heterosexual white males to embrace a society in which the rules are as likely to be made by homosexuals or by women wearing trousers as by men, a society in which white men are neither expected nor permitted to protect white women, in which men no longer are the heads of their households or the decision makers for their nation. Now, I've tried to state the governing principle behind education in America today objectively, even though I know there are listeners who will think I've soft-pedaled it because they are familiar with many aspects of our present educational system which are blatantly anti-white or anti-male. In response to this objection, I assert again that the governing principle is egalitarianism. It is not to put women above men or homosexuals above heterosexuals or blacks above whites, but rather to condition everyone into accepting a society in which neither race nor sex, nor sexual orientation is important. That's the theory. But because heterosexual white males have had the leading role in building and governing our society in the past, they are seen as the enemy by many of the egalitarian enthusiasts. They are seen as the people who have to be put down before we can have a truly egalitarian society. Anyway, an egalitarian society is the ideal. And of course, that is absolutely crazy. It is nuts. It is suicidally insane. The aim of our educational system is to produce citizens who have been conditioned to believe, or to act as if they believe, that men and women are interchangeable, essentially the same except for the configuration of their genitalia, and should be treated exactly the same by society and have similar roles. And this means suppressing the old belief that men and women are fundamentally different, physically, intellectually, and emotionally, that their natural roles in society and in the family are not the same, but instead are complementary, and that they should be treated accordingly, which means differently. The aim of our educational system is to produce citizens who have been conditioned to believe, or to act as if they believe, that homosexuality is as natural a condition as heterosexuality, that homosexuality is in no way undesirable or reprehensible, that the only difference between homosexuals and heterosexuals is in their choice of sexual partners, and that homosexuals and heterosexuals should be treated exactly the same by society. And the aim of our educational system is to produce citizens who have been conditioned to believe, or to act as if they believe, that racial differences are the most unimportant, superficial, and inconsequential thing in the world, that the only real differences are in pigmentation, that blacks and whites and Australian Aborigines and Chinamen have the same way of viewing the world, the same intrinsic values and behavioral patterns, the same capacity for self-discipline, the same type and degree of intelligence, the same problem-solving ability, the same aptitude for building civilizations and maintaining them, and that to believe otherwise is not only wrong, but sinful and shameful. In fact, the gravest possible sin, the most shameful possible error, is racism, and the severest means should be used to exorcise it, and the severest penalties imposed to punish those who adhere to it. That, I think, is a fair and objective statement of current American educational policy. I believe that even those who think it is a good policy will agree with my statement. But as you know, I do not think it is a good policy, and certainly a Martian observer can be excused for thinking that we are either stupid or crazy to have such a policy, because it will lead us to our extinction. A minute ago, I said that the theory of current American educational policy is egalitarianism, that the purpose is to produce politically correct citizens. Actually, that's a bit naive. The people most responsible for the current policy, the people behind the scenes who use egalitarianism as a nation-destroying and a race-destroying weapon to serve their own ends, are not egalitarians at all. They believe not only that they are superior to all the nations of the world, to all the Gentiles of the world, but also that they are more deserving. They believe that it is right and proper for them to deceive and demoralize the Gentiles, to destroy the Gentiles' sense of racial identity and racial pride, to feminize Gentile men and masculinize Gentile women in order to make easier prey of the Gentiles. And so they go beyond egalitarianism in the schools. They teach our children and our university students about their special status, about why they deserve more than others. Holocaust studies, they call it. It's already mandatory in the public schools of many states, and they're pushing hard to make it mandatory everywhere. The reason for requiring the teaching of the Holocaust story to Gentile children, they say, is to warn them what terrible things may happen if people are permitted to be racists or anti-Semites. The Holocaust, they say, was the most terrible thing which ever has happened, and it was perpetrated by racists and anti-Semites. Actually, that's not the reason for Holocaust studies at all. The Holocaust may be the worst thing that's happened to the Jews, but what the communists did to our people, to Gentiles, in Russia and Ukraine and Poland and the Baltic countries and Germany was far worse. The communists murdered at least 30 million of our people in those countries alone. The communist movement which committed those murders was inspired by the Jew Karl Marx and was heavily staffed by Jews. The death camp commissars in the Soviet Union during the 1920s and 1930s, the brutal commissars of the Gulag, about which Alexander Solzhenitsyn has written, were mostly Jews. Jews were vastly overrepresented among the Soviet secret police and elsewhere in the Soviet bureaucracy. A Jew headed the murder squad which butchered the Tsar of Russia and his family. It was a Jew, Lazar Kaganovich, who supervised the murder of millions of Ukrainians. Jews headed the communist parties in many European countries outside of the Soviet Union in the time between the two world wars. And when they were given the opportunity, they committed horrible atrocities against the populations of those countries, selectively murdering the best and the brightest people. That's what they did in the Baltic countries and in Poland, for example. So, if the aim is to teach children about the terrible things which can happen when the wrong sort of people acquire power, why not teach them about what the Jewish communists did? Why is there practically no teaching at all in the schools about these things? Well, you already know the answer. It's because Jews weren't the victims, but were to a large degree the perpetrators. It's because if the kiddies learn about what the Jews did to the peoples of Eastern and Central Europe before the Second World War, they might begin to think that it was quite reasonable for the Germans to want the Jews out of Germany so that the Jews couldn't do in Germany what they had done elsewhere. That would put the so-called Holocaust in quite a different light, wouldn't it? My point is that egalitarianism is the theory behind education in America today, but in fact the schools are used to a growing extent to brainwash students in whatever manner best serves the people who control the educational system. It's not just the Jews who are responsible for the conditioning going on in our schools. It's also feminists and homosexuals and egalitarians of all sorts. And just as they lie about the Holocaust, just as they conceal the crimes of the communists in order to serve the purposes of the Jews, they also lie about other things to serve other purposes. They lie about the nature of homosexuality, for example, because that serves the purpose of the homosexuals. They lie about the differences between men and women because that serves the purpose of the feminists. And they lie about race because they do want to encourage more miscegenation. And they do want to deceive and disarm whites who might otherwise put up a resistance to racial mixing and miscegenation. They tell the public school students that we're really all the same and that to think otherwise is wicked. And they try to convince university students that the concept of race is meaningless, that it has no scientific basis. They teach them that there has been so much genetic mixing among the races in the past that there is no such thing as a pure race today, and so the whole idea of trying to preserve one's race is pointless. Just give up. It's too late. Using the schools to condition as well as to educate is not new, of course. In the 19th century, it was assumed that everyone in school was at least a nominal Christian, for example, and it also was assumed that it would be a good thing to condition everyone to be even more Christian in his beliefs. This was true in most of the universities as well as in the public schools. If you take a close look at the most widely used instructional materials, at the McGuffey's Readers, for example, you'll recognize these built-in assumptions. Christianity was not treated simply as one religion among many. It was treated as the religion. In the first half of the 20th century, students were conditioned politically to believe that democracy was the best possible form of government, and that the United States was the ideal embodiment of democracy. American history and the functioning of the American political system were idealized for the students. Now, I personally am neither a Christian nor a Democrat, but let me tell you, the Christian conditioning and the democratic conditioning of the past were nothing compared to the egalitarian, feminist, Jewish conditioning in today's schools. The old conditioning may not have been the sort of thing of which all of us would approve, but it was relatively harmless. Most of the people who formulated the old conditioning at least meant well. They weren't trying to destroy us. That cannot be said of the people behind today's conditioning. Today's conditioning is aimed at making politically correct lemmings out of everyone who passes through the schools. Lemmings who will not question or oppose any of the policies of the conditioners. Lemmings who will not put up a fight against those who deliberately are destroying our country, our civilization, and our race. And the conditioning, unfortunately, is doing the job it was intended to do. It is recruiting a substantial portion of our young people in the universities today into the camp of our enemies and using them to help with the destruction of our race. More than a decade ago, I gave a talk to a mostly white group of students at the University of Maryland. After the talk, a pretty girl about 19 or 20 years old, came up to me and asked me if I thought that the present conflict between the races might develop into a shooting war. I told her that if the government continued its policy of trying to forcefully integrate the races, I thought a race war likely. She told me, "Well, if the shooting starts, I'll be with the blacks shooting at you." And she looked really proud of herself when she told me that. She knew that she had said the politically correct thing. A few days ago, a computer vandal managed to break into the natvan.com website, which hosts my programs. He trashed the site, and he left a message saying that he had done it because the site encourages white supremacy. He spouted a lot of the pseudo-scientific nonsense I mentioned a moment ago about there being no such thing as separate races, the sort of nonsense the egalitarians are conditioning students with in the universities. And he summarized it all with the statement, and I quote, "No matter if you're black, white, Asian, whatever, you are related to every other human on the face of the earth. This means, of course, that no race can be deemed superior to another, as we are all a mixture of each other," end quote. How's that for logic? Really, that is exactly the sort of fuzzy thinking which passes muster at our universities these days, so desperately eager are the egalitarians to support their insupportable position. Well, it's going to be a long and bloody war. A very painful and destructive war. Meanwhile, it might behoove you to pay more attention to the sort of conditioning your kids are getting at school. Do whatever you have to do to make sure that they are on the right side of the war. Thanks for being with me again today.